The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
We're at the end of an epic week for President Trump. It all started with U.S. strikes that obliterated Iran's nuclear program, followed by a ceasefire between Israel and Iran. Rwanda and the Congo just signed a peace deal at the White House today. NATO members committed to double their contributions. Oil and gas prices are down. The stock market just hit a record high. And to top it all off, today, a massive series of wins for President Trump at the U.S. Supreme Court. First, in a 6-3 vote, the Supreme Court rebuked the partisan activist judges who tried to impede Trump's agenda with dozens of nationwide injunctions. Those nationwide injunctions are now over, and the despotic behavior from America's far-left lower court judges has been held in check. Watch this.
Taking power away from these absolutely crazy radical left judges is a tremendous, this is such a big day. This is such a big day, but this is a very big moment, and it gives power back to people that should have it, including Congress, including the presidency. And it only takes bad power away from judges.
Mr. President, you were just coming off of one of the most consequential weeks anybody has ever seen, from striking Iran to going to NATO to announcing two deals and then the Supreme Court victory. Have you been able to digest what has occurred in the last 7 days?
Not really. It was pretty wild period of time. And I really think in 6 months, we've taken the country and turned it around.
A wild period of time. That is for sure. We have all of that and a lot more to get to on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us today, broadcasting to you from our beautiful studio in Edstone, our beautiful campus. You can see the building behind me, a little fuzzy, but that's where we've been the last few days. And a lot is going on, as per usual. Every Monday, it seems, we have twice as much material to get to. But you heard the commentators. It's an epic week for the President of the United States. He's getting one victory after another. That's the way that they see it. But then you look into the long-term impact, let's say, of the big, beautiful bill, or trying to reach a peace deal with the King of the South, Iran. We'll update you on all of those stories. I know we spent a lot of time on Iran for obvious reasons just last week, but there's more that's rolling out. But to go back to the victory in court, the Supreme Court, that is. I mean, we're seeing Amos 7 play out, basically. It's being fulfilled, and it's happening incrementally. It's not all at once. But for those that were skeptics when they heard my father or read his articles in the Trumpet about the kingdom's court, now you see what's happening. I mean, the 6-3, the ruling on Friday, smacking down something like 700 federal judges, all these activist rogue judges that were trying to slow down the progress, the forward momentum of this administration. And the ruling on Friday, it's just going to give Jeroboam more king-like powers. And as we're seeing, I mean, he's using them. It's not all for good, but he's definitely using them. And his agenda goes forward. Later on in the show, too, we're gonna have more feedback from the performance, the Celtic Throne performance in Leeds last night. And you've been enjoying that, I know, for the last several weeks. And when they were in Israel, the troop, you'll recall that I just emphasized continually the contrast between what was happening in the world. I mean, the war broke out while our performers were in Jerusalem. And as I said, what a stark contrast when you look at, you know, these ballistic missiles flying into Israel. And then you have this wonderful, hopeful, beautiful message playing out on stage in Tel Aviv, in Haifa, And the same thing is happening here. I mean, last night we didn't have the whole stadium full, sadly. I wish that it was. But they performed in a big stadium, basically, where you would have music festivals and the like. And then you have news breaking over the weekend from this Glastonbury music festival, where the performer, if you can call him that, he's up there chanting Free Palestine, and then he adds to that, kill the IDF, kill Israel, kill the Jews. And it's on BBC. It's on state-run television. That's what it amounts to. He's chanting, and tens of thousands of people go to this music festival. I think it's one of the most popular music festivals every year. And he's chanting, kill the IDF. I'll play you the clip later. But it's just shocking. What has happened to Britain? Here, that music festival's going on the same time that we're performing in Leeds in a stadium, in a large gap, or at least a large theater. Not nearly enough people were there, though. I think it was like 500-600. And the ones that go always love it. But what a contrast. And then you look at the history of Glastonbury. We write about some of that in the new throne of, sorry, the history of God's true church. I've got another quote from the new throne of David for later on. But this music festival started back in 1970. And if you're familiar with Herbert Armstrong's writings, what he wrote in The Missing Dimension in Sex, what he said about some of the festivals in the United States, Woodstock and so on back at that time. This started in 1970, some guy's farm trying to make money, you know, off of his land. And it just turned into, as you would expect, coming into the new morality, this hippie festival. It says here in the True History of God's True Church book, early Greek historians agree that Peter spent a substantial, that's the Apostle Peter, he spent a substantial amount of time in Britain. These historians also record that other notable men who brought the gospel to Britain included the Apostle Paul. I mean, Jesus Christ may have had history in and around that area. It says here, one church building of special note exists in the small English town of Glastonbury. 17th century English antiquary Sir Henry Spelman wrote, it is certain that Britain received the faith in the first age from the first sowers of the world. I mean, this is where God's church started in the UK, Glastonbury, I mean. And now you've got this festival playing out. How shameful. I mean, all of this incredible history, the incredible history of God's true church. And you look at Britain today, and my father talks a fair bit about that in the New Throne of David booklet. We'll come to that contrast again a little bit later in the show as a lead-in to the wonderful feedback that we keep getting from these performances. Let's move ahead to clip. Speaking of these victories that Trump is now getting in court, listen to this one from Kellyanne Conway. You heard her in the cold open, clip 11.
Not only is this a huge win for President Trump and the rule of law, but it was made even sweeter with a striking rebuke of far-left Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. In the majority opinion, Justice Amy Coney Barrett stated, quote, we will not dwell on Justice Jackson's argument, which is at odds with more than two centuries worth of precedent, not to mention the Constitution itself. We observe only this. Justice Jackson decries an imperial executive while embracing an imperial judiciary. Wow. Coney Barrett even mocked Ketanji Brown Jackson for her failing to analyze a statute because it involved, quote, boring legalese. Meanwhile, Ketanji Brown Jackson was also on the losing side of Mammoet versus Taylor. In another 6-3 decision, the court ruled that parents do, in fact, have the final say on their children's education, and they can opt out of LGBTQ curriculum.
So that first part there, I mean, that amounts to just a total smackdown
of the liberal justice on the court, saying, I'm not even going to dignify it by giving an answer. It's just, it's crazy. So they smack their own justices down together with these rogue federal justices. That was a huge, huge victory for President Trump on Friday. And just coming back to the big picture here for a moment, this is at Breitbart. Senate advancing the big, beautiful bill caps off a remarkable week of wins. And then it just goes through, you know, we dropped the bomb on the factories in Iran, and then it talks about the ceasefire. They see all of this as positive, you know, good developments. And then the big, beautiful bill, that's a victory for Trump as well. That's a win. And then the win in court, I mean, and that one is very significant given what we said about Amos 7. So there's no getting around the fact that this has been a wild last week and a half or so. Epic, in the words of one commentator. And Donald Trump and his administration, I mean, they are patting themselves on the back. We've turned it around in 6 months. We've gotten our country back. You think back to last week, the show where we talked about, you know, all that's happened just since the debate debacle from 12 months ago. I think we touched on that on Friday's show. Here's another clip we'll move ahead. Let's just go ahead to the reaction from the radical left. This is from MSNBC, clip 6.
Imagine Donald Trump wants to do something illegal to you, Ali Velshi. Imagine that he wants to murder you. Imagine that he and Stephen Miller release an entire policy explaining about how they can murder Canadian journalists who are working in America because they're taking the jobs from real American journalists, right? So he's going to murder you. So Donald Trump starts murdering people. That is the upshot of yesterday's decision. Donald Trump has declared that he is going to do an unconstitutional thing. And various people have been able to secure the court's order that he cannot do the unconstitutional thing to them.
It's crazy that this passes for commentary. All of these scenarios. Remember that when Trump was making his way back last year? Miraculously, a lot of miracles played into that. A lot of fulfilled prophecy, and all these people going through what-if scenarios. Well, if he gets back, if he wins, that's the death of democracy. It's over. And then you listen to them there. Imagine if Donald Trump said, kill Canadian journalists. What in the world? What is wrong with these people? This was this was also exposed over the weekend. Kagan, she's on the court. This is something that she said back just 3 years ago. And then it shows how much of a judicial activist these people are. They're just political hacks. They're activists that happen to be wearing judge's clothing or a judge's robe. Listen to clip 3.
That can't be right, that one district court, whether it's in, you know, in the Trump years, people used to go to the Northern District of California. And in the Biden years, they go to Texas. And it just can't be right that one district judge can stop a nationwide policy in its tracks and leave it stopped for the years that it takes to go through normal process.
So 3 years ago, she's like, it can't be right for a federal judge to be able to stop Trump or Biden or whoever. And of course, now she sides with the liberal minority. The ultra-liberal minority. Now, you see, we need those activist judges out there stopping the Trump administration. This is from Red State. It says, in a 6-3 decision authored by Amy Coney Barrett, the court granted the government's applications to partially stay the district court's nationwide injunctions in the birthright citizenship cases, noting that universal injunctions likely exceed the equitable authority that Congress has granted to federal courts. So this puts an end to a lot of it, a lot of the judicial activism that's been slowing down. And again, we're just, as you heard in the cold open, we're only 6 months into the Trump administration. And it certainly is epic in the sense that it's happening in such a fast and furious manner. This is one thing after another. There were people that said a lot of the reason why he had to have that ceasefire in place last Tuesday is because then he's got to move on to the next thing, the big, beautiful bill. Yeah, we end war today. Tomorrow we pass this monstrosity and we add $2.2 trillion to the national debt every single year. And then we're on to the next thing. We get the victory in court. He is fulfilling his will. God's purpose does stand. But all of this shows, though, still just how divided, how bitterly divided America is, whether you look at it politically or in courtrooms, wherever it is. You just see all kinds of division and strife. Would Donald Trump be in office right now were it not for God intervening the way that he did all through last year? We're, you know, we just passed the debate debacle anniversary, and we're coming up to the anniversary of the assassination attempt, where an assassin shot Donald Trump's ear, and miraculously his head turned at the precise moment that it needed to for his life to continue, his physical life. That happened less than a year ago. As I say, we're coming up on the anniversary. But now coming back to this SCOTUS ruling, listen to Jonathan Turley over at Fox News, clip 8.
And I think that the first thing the president should do is go buy a lottery ticket because he's having a heck of a week. If I was going to get a lottery ticket, it'd probably be today. But this is a huge win for him. It does negate what has been a stumbling block. These judges have been throwing sand in the works in many of his policies, from immigration to birthright citizenship to DOGE cuts. That will presumably now be tamped down if these judges try to circumvent that. I think they'll find an even more expedited path to a Supreme Court that's going to continue to reverse some of these, lift some of these injunctions. As you noted, the opinion was really radioactive in this takedown of Justice Jackson. It's rare. I've been covering the Supreme Court for decades. It's rare to see that type of exchange. The important thing to remember is that, you know, Justice Barrett delivered what was essentially a pile driver, but she didn't do it alone. I mean, her colleagues signed on to this. And I think it's very clear that the majority is getting tired of the histrionics and the hysteria that seems to be growing a bit on the left side of the court. But this was really an astonishing takedown by the justice. But it's the hyperbole that's coming out of the dissent that is so notable. Justice Sotomayor in that Maryland case said that giving parents the ability to opt out of a few lessons was going to, quote, create chaos and probably end public education. Then you had Justice Jackson saying this could very well essentially be the death of democracy. It's the type of hyperbole that most justices have avoided.
He's referencing there are a few other cases that were ruled on, again, favorable to the Trump agenda. One, that states can protect children from online pornography. Hard to believe anyone would fight against that, but leave it to the liberal justices on the Supreme Court. There is a conservative majority. And as my father has said, it's not like Jeroboam owns the court. It's not like he appoints them. Well, yeah, I guess he appointed three of them. But it says that the court favors Jeroboam, and that's what we're seeing. You know, imagine being so skeptical and so questioning that as soon as you read it in the trumpet and maybe there's not one ruling that goes the way of President Trump, you just throw your arms in the air and say, well, I guess that was a false prophecy. No, look, Friday was huge. This was a huge victory for the Trump administration. I think Turley talked there about parents having the right to opt out their kids from LGBTQ training or teaching, any classroom activities that support that kind of Sodom and Gomorrah behavior. giving some rights or some authority back to the parents. That's refreshing. That's not something we've seen very much of in recent years. Listen again to Jonathan Turley from the other day, clip 9.
I want to begin by sharing a graphic. A lot of people are going to wonder about this reasoning behind this debate. And frankly, it all has to do with nationwide injunctions. I mean, if you just think about 3 per term under the Bush years, Obama, not that many. But look at what they've been attempting to do. This is lawfare on full display.
Well, that's why this is such an enormous victory for the Trump administration. Basically, the president's had to drag about 700 district court judges down this road, and it has slowed the progress of the policies that he wants to pursue. Now, you can disagree with those policies, but he was elected to carry out those policies. And what he said yesterday is true, that he's not the first president who's objected to this. Democratic presidents have objected to national injunctions as well. And the problem is that when these individual judges freeze an entire program or policy for the nation, it can take 2 years before you get that lifted or reversed. By then, you're in the second half of your term, and it's very hard to achieve many results.
It used to be that both sides of the aisle would agree with this. You know, none of those federal judges were voted in a presidential election. And here you have Donald Trump. How many voted for him? I forget, 90 million or something? And he comes in because the American people spoke and they want a new direction. Coming back to this prophecy, Amos 7 and verse 13, it calls it the king's, it's speaking of Jeroboam, and it says the king's court. And he says the word kings is different, a different Hebrew word than when he talked about the king's chapel. It means kingdom. The King James reads, the house of the kingdom. Wycliffe translates it, house of the realm. It says, this is not a religious entity. It is something else, the nation's house. It's not something that is following Jeroboam, yet it favors him. This is back in 2019. I mean, that's 6 years ago. And my father's basically saying, look, this is what's going to happen because the Bible says so. You know, men, it's like Joel Hilliker said in the latest Trumpet magazine. I'll come to that a little bit later. But he says men may not say so, but prophets do or did. God does. And of course, that's why you come to this program, or that's why you visit thetrumpet.com, because you want God's perspective. And look at these prophecies that are being fulfilled in such detail the way God described it. It's incredible. It's faith building. It's inspiring. He says, I believe this non-religious entity, the kingdom's house, is referring to the United States Supreme Court. That was back in 2019. Amos 7 implies that there's a conservative advantage in the Supreme Court, one that favors Jeroboam. You see, it favors him. And that's what we're seeing. He's getting some favor. And like I said, it's maybe trickled out of that institution, but it's now there. You know, it's something where you thought, surely this will happen in February or March. This is crazy to have some judge in Hawaii or in California, in San Francisco, basically tell the country, no, you can't deport these illegals. Well, yes, he can. So says the kingdom's court. When we come back, we've got much more to get to regarding the big, beautiful bill, or the, as I've called it, the big, beautiful load of debt. That's what we're adding to the American economy, to the swamp, to the deep state, whatever you want to call D.C. I mean, if there's one thing that both sides, never mind what Democrats are saying now, hypocritically, but what both sides of the aisle have always been able to agree upon is, let's, especially since COVID, let's spend $2 trillion more than we actually take in. We'll get to that. We'll get to the update on Iran. And as I say, we've also got some feedback from the Celtic Throne performance last night in Leeds. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Prosperity, government, trade,
technology, stability, freedom. The last two centuries have been the exception in human history. How did we get here? The 19th century was dominated by an empire that exported civility, order, standards, and opened the doors for global trade. It ended slavery and implemented a system of governance that protected people's rights. And then in the 20th century, a new power came to dominate. Remarkably, one that would continue in the same traditions as its predecessor. For 200 years, the United States and Britain dominated the world stage. How did these two nations rise to prominence so suddenly? And why are their legacies so relentlessly attacked today? The astonishing truth is that your Bible prophesied the rise of Britain and the United States. It also prophesied their fall. The biblical identity of these two nations is the vital key that unlocks Bible prophecy. This lost master key to prophecy is revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's most requested book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You must understand the biblical identities of these two nations to comprehend where we are in Bible prophecy today. To learn more about this vital truth, request your free copy of The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
You know, the bottom line is this is a budget reconciliation process pretty well devoid of actually talking about numbers. About the only number we heard out of the House was $1.5 trillion, which sounds like a lot until you put it in context of the CBO's 10-year projection of $89 trillion being spent, $22 trillion of projected deficit over the next 10 years. That's a $2.2 trillion deficit per year, completely unsustainable, not even coming close to returning to a reasonable pre-pandemic level of spending. So, again, we're just not taking the time to actually debate this.
Not even taking the time to debate it. That's Senator Ron Johnson. One of the few fiscally conservative senators who's saying, can't we even debate it? Can't we do something that Doge recommended? Doge is long gone. So is Elon Musk. Elon Musk he's still criticizing this big bloated bill, anything but beautiful. Says here, Elon Musk ripped into the Senate's massive domestic policy package on Saturday, calling it utterly insane and destructive, pointing to provisions in the bill that will raise taxes on many solar, battery, geothermal, wind, and nuclear energy sites. Of course, he said earlier this year that it was a disgusting abomination and that the bill should be killed. But there's Ron Johnson saying, We're adding $22 trillion in debt over the next 10 years. I mean, the debt stands at $37 trillion at the moment. So we're going to add $22 trillion more. And that's assuming that the next guy after Donald Trump, assuming time went on that long, would actually spend the same amount. He may spend more. That's what they do. Ever since COVID. You see, COVID was a crisis. So we've got to spend $2 trillion extra. And that's what we've been doing every year since. We haven't dialed it back at all. Not one penny. So much for Doge, as I say. Here was another critic of the big bloated load of debt added to the federal deficit. This is Senator Tom Tillis, clip two.
Now, Republicans are about to make a mistake on health care and betraying a promise. It is inescapable that this bill in its current form will betray the very promise that Donald J. Trump made in the Oval Office or in the cabinet room when I was there with finance, where he said, we can go after waste, fraud, and abuse on any programs.
Never happened. I mean, Trump's most loyal supporters, they're not going to like hearing it. But, and in a lot of ways, they're not bothered by it. I mean, we've been spending way beyond our means for decades.
So everyone's under this delusional reasoning that it can just go on forever. Yeah, we can go from 37 to 57 trillion, 59 trillion actually, in just 10 years, one decade. This is where we are. It really and truly is shocking to see the childish reasoning of so many of these leaders in America. You look over here in the UK, you see the leadership with Starmer, you see the BBC giving a platform to all of this propaganda. You see how the international news outlets report on the Israel-Palestinian situation. You see CNN journalists working their way into Tehran or cozying up to the new leadership in Syria. And of course, the jihadists in suits, they love them. They love our propagandists because they help deliver their message. Iran, I mean, for its part, you look at, again, I told you last week about just how ultra sensitive the Trump administration is. If you dare say anything other than those nuke facilities were obliterated, if you don't say that, then, I mean, you're singled out. You're a traitor. And yet you look at all these conflicting reports. You look at a lot of reporting coming out of the UK here at the Telegraph. You look at some of the leaks. We talked about this last week on the show. Listen to this. This is European coverage of the ongoing controversy on whether or not the nuke facilities were obliterated. This is clip 12.
The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency says Iran could resume enriching uranium within months after the latest Israeli and U.S. attacks on its nuclear facilities. Rafael Grossi's statement contradicted President Donald Trump's claims that last week's bombing raids had, quote, obliterated Iran's nuclear program. The Iranian parliament has suspended its cooperation with the International Atomic Energy Agency following the strikes.
Iran's deputy foreign minister has told our correspondent in Tehran that his country won't start talks on its nuclear program unless the US guarantees not to bomb them again during the negotiations. It comes as the head of the UN's nuclear watchdog, the IAEA, warns that Iran retains the capacity to resume enriching uranium in a matter of months and could still produce a nuclear bomb.
We are hearing from Washington telling us that they want to talk. By the way, no date has been set.
President Trump talked about this week.
But I'm telling you that we have not agreed to any date. We have not agreed to the modality. Right now, we are seeking an answer to this question. Are we going to see a repetition of an act of aggression while we are engaging in dialogue?
Satellite imagery shows Iran's nuclear sites were badly damaged, but Iran still says it won't stop enriching uranium.
Why should we agree to such a proposal?
Because you paid. Iranians on this visit have told us that Iran has paid too high a price for enriching uranium, causing suspicions even among your European partners about why you were enriching to 60%. It wasn't necessary.
First of all, 60% is something which is being used for peaceful purposes.
But it did create this situation of suspicion.
The level of that can be discussed. The capacity can be discussed. But to say that you should not have enrichment, you should have zero enrichment, and if you do not agree, we will bomb you, that is the law of the jungle.
That's Iran's deputy foreign minister. Basically saying, hey, we're going to continue to enrich. And there's reporting that Iran's cut off, you know, relations with the UN agency that's responsible for overseeing the nuclear development program. And yet you have representatives from the Trump administration that just insist that Iran's finished. The nuclear weapons program is over. It's been obliterated. This is from the Telegraph. U.S. strikes on Iran less devastating than expected. Intercepted calls reveal. It says U.S. strikes on Iranian nuclear sites were less devastating than Tehran expected, according to intercepted phone calls between senior Iranian officials. So these are Iranian officials. We've intercepted the calls, and they're basically on the phone with each other saying, yeah, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. It says here, the Trump administration did not deny the existence of the calls and criticized the newspaper for publishing the information. So, well, yeah, the calls are legit, but hey, why are you reporting on this? Really? That's coming from the Trump administration? After all the censorship during the years of the Dear Leader, this is what the Trump people want? You shouldn't even be talking about this. You shouldn't even be talking about those intercepted phone calls. Why? Why shouldn't we? I mean, people want the truth, right? I mean, don't we want to know if it's 3 months away from resuming or maybe 2 years like the Israelis think? As I say, lots of conflicting reports. It says here, the notion, well, let me back up. It's shameful that the Washington Post is helping people commit felonies by publishing out of context leaks. Well, I will admit that the Washington Post and the New York Times, we can lump them all in there. They're responsible for a lot of shameful reporting throughout the years. No doubt about that. But listen, it's a phone call. It was intercepted. The Iranian officials are on the line saying this is good. It's not as bad as we thought. That's pretty incredible. Listen to President Trump on with Maria Bartiromo as he talks about the strike on those Iranian facilities. Clip 14.
And they did obliterate it, it turned out. Then we had to suffer the fake news, where the fake news in CNN and the New York Times was saying, well, maybe it wasn't as good as Trump said. Maybe it wasn't totally obliterated, but it was destroyed, but not, just horrible. And I could see it happening. And they tried to build that into a story. And then it turned out, no, it was obliterated like nobody's ever seen before. And that meant the end to their nuclear ambitions, at least for a period of time. And a lot of people have said, well, do you think they're going to start again? I said, the last thing they want to do right now is think about nuclear.
We made this point last week. I mean, it really is stunning to hear him say they don't want to. We obliterated it and they don't want to restart it. And then you get the Iranian officials on the line and they're like, yeah, we're going to keep enriching. Yeah, we want to keep going forward. Why should we agree to anything that the U.S. is proposing? This article from The Telegraph. The UN's nuclear watchdog has warned that Iran is able to start enriching uranium for a possible nuclear weapon in a matter of months. That's the UN nuclear watchdog. It could happen in months. I mean, who's right? We don't know for sure, but when you get the next issue of The Trumpet, the August issue, I mean, you'll get the big picture perspective. Iran is still the king of the South. Iran is still going to come out of this pushing at the king of the north. That's what Daniel 11 and verse 40 says. I mean, really, what's playing out here is a Middle Eastern realignment that falls right in step with what's prophesied in Psalm 83. I mean, we've been talking about it at the trumpet. The fact that these Iranian proxies, Hamas, Hezbollah, the alliance with Syria, they were all going to peel away from Iran. And Iran's going to be looking elsewhere for allies in the region, specifically Egypt, Libya, Ethiopia. That's what's spelled out there in Daniel 11. Listen to this again, clip 15, as President Trump just summarizes the events of these past 8-10 days, clip 15.
Do you think that the Iran regime hid some of the enriched uranium before the strikes?
No. You mean, did they take it out of a deep one? No.
Because you were pretty clear you can't have a weapon. You're going to have to come to the talk. Something's going to happen.
I don't think they did. No, I think, first of all, it's very hard to do. It's very dangerous to do. It's very heavy, very, very heavy.
I saw reports that there were 400 kilograms, 800 pounds that they moved. But I wonder if it's traceable. I mean, if they were to have moved,
they
didn't move anything. How will you know if he tries to start things up again? Because Iran just said that they are halting cooperation with the UN nuclear watchdog.
The last thing they're going to be doing right now, for a period of time at least, is nuclear. They've had it. They've been trying it for 25 years. The last thing they're going to do is nuclear.
So, I mean, you've got a regime that's been building ballistic missiles, building or trying to build a nuclear weapon. Why should we think that they're actually going to give up on this?
Well, they might not give up, but they're going to give up on it while they're exhausted. They are exhausted.
They're exhausted. So everything was obliterated. The last thing they want to do is restart it. They're tired. They're exhausted. I mean, those are a lot of wild assumptions. You think about, like Churchill said, I mean, this is certainly something you don't want to be wrong about. What if they do? Well, we know what the history has been for 46 years, even history. Forget about Daniel 11 for a second. But what, I mean, they're defiantly shaking. The Ayatollah came out and declared victory. I mean, that's kind of delusional as well, but still, there's no hint of repentance or remorse. They're still going to try to kill Jews. I mean, it should be fresh on our minds what happened on October 7. As it is, it's like, well, it's so far in the past. Look, we've moved on, and everybody wants to make a deal. That's the thinking. That's the mindset. Listen to Iran's ambassador to the UN. This is clip 7.
Can you give us some clarity? Does Iran intend to reconstitute a nuclear enrichment program on its soil?
The enrichment is our right, an inalienable right, and we want to implement this right.
So you do plan to restart enrichment, that sounds like.
I think that enrichment will not never stop.
I think that enrichment will never stop. That's the ambassador to the UN. No, it's our right. Who are you to tell us to stop this? That doesn't sound like he's tired and exhausted, and the last thing on his mind is to continue enriching uranium. It's just the opposite. So, and they've been saying these things for 46 years. And the threat was so imminent that they had to have that Operation Midnight Hammer. I mean, Donald Trump has admitted as much. They're defeated. It's obliterated. Now, they were close. That's why we had to send the B-2s over there. It doesn't even make sense to sit there and say, it's all over. It's all over. And now we have peace. I mean, President Trump, as you heard last week, he's likening this to Hiroshima, dropping an atomic bomb on an entire city. I mean, it took two of them before the Japanese finally surrendered. This is Newt Gingrich, his commentary from Fox last night, clip 5.
We won the military campaign. We don't know yet if we'll win the peace. If we don't win the peace, then this was simply an interim moment before Iran goes back to being extraordinarily dangerous. And frankly, what we've heard so far in his first speech from the Ayatollah Khamenei is not encouraging. It was aggressive. It was hostile. It basically argued for continuation. If that's where they're at, then this will be a temporary truce, and we will have to, frankly, take apart their government, which I know the president doesn't want to do. But otherwise, this is a campaign that will not have succeeded. They should, in fact, pull back all the sleeper cells. They should, in fact, drop the term death to America and death to Israel. They should, in fact, pull up the 400 kilograms of uranium that they've apparently hidden. But either we get to a serious disarmament of Iran, or this was a temporary campaign in a much longer war.
A much longer war. This was just a temporary campaign. I mean, it lasted 37 hours. I'm talking about the U.S. hit. 37 hours, and that's it. Problem solved. Yet you listen to the Supreme Leader, and as he said there, it's not encouraging. This does not sound like a changed man. You listen to their ambassador, you listen to whoever, their defense minister, any of them. Listen to their parliament last week as they chanted death to America? Are they changed? Has their nature changed? Sundance has this pretty incredible story. It was last week, actually. I just didn't have the time to get to it. But it says here, last night on CNBC, presidential envoy Steve Witkoff hinted that some stunning revelations around expansion of the Abraham Peace Accords would likely surface in the next week. He says immediately thereafter, Trump sent a message of support for Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu against a judicial effort targeting the prime minister. So here is the U.S. president, again, trying to bring everyone together. It says, today we start to hear some rather stunning developments. It talks about this article from Israel Hayom, one of the newspapers over there. Israel Hayom's reporting on the outlines of a peace agreement and long-term solution for the Israel-Gaza conflict. It says, according to Hayom, there was a four-way call between Trump, Netanyahu, Rubio, and Ron Dermer. This is from the Israel Hayom report. Gaza, this is all being negotiated. Gaza hostilities conclude within 2 weeks. Four Arab nations, including Egypt and UAE, will administer the Gaza Strip, replacing the murderous Hamas regime. The remaining Hamas leadership will face exile to other countries, possibly Qatar, you know, one of our newest allies, or Turkey, while the hostages gain freedom. Multiple nations globally will accept numerous Gaza inhabitants. Abraham Accords expansion will bring Syria, Saudi Arabia, and additional Arab and Muslim countries to recognize Israel. Israel will declare its willingness for future Palestinian conflict resolution under the two states concept. It says the United States will acknowledge limited Israeli sovereignty implementation in Judea and Samaria. So you get to the end of this, and Sundance is like, I mean, this is incredible. He's on board with the MAGA movement. I mean, these are some big ideas. There's no getting around that. But will it bring peace to the Middle East? Will it solve the problems that have gone on ever since Israel was established as a state in 1948? The Bible says that the Great Tribulation, the trigger that sets it off, is in Jerusalem, in the Middle East, in Israel. I mentioned the latest Trumpet magazine. Actually, it's not out yet. It's going to press as we speak. Joel Hilliker has an article. He says, is Iran's regime finished? I mean, it would be, I mean, you listen to all of those sound bites we played last week, and you could be forgiven for assuming that, I guess it's over. I guess we're going to have regime change. He says, even Iran's loss of influence in Gaza, Lebanon, Syria, that's prophesied, to just paraphrase what he says later. Further on, Mr. Hilliker says, the Iran quandary isn't going away. As enthralling as the notion may be that this regional powerhouse was neutralized by 12 days of mostly aerial attack, ignores history and defies logic. First, how much of extremist Iran remains intact? What Israel and America did was not all-out war, not the ruin of the regime or the assassination of Khomeini, not the destruction of Iranian conventional forces, not even the obliteration of the nuclear program. We didn't even totally destroy the nuclear program. And then what about all the other terrorist forces or terrorist weapons that they either have or that they sponsor around the world? 12 days did not solve what's been a problem for the region for 46 years. And your Bible, I mean, your Bible tells us how that this is going to play out. Make sure that you keep an eye on the mailbox for the August issue of the Trumpet. Or if you don't have a Trumpet subscription, there's no cost or obligation. We offer it out freely. Just call our operators today. If you're in North America, we have the 800 number. If you're overseas or if you're in the UK, just go to the website, thetrumpet.com, and request your free one-year subscription to The Trumpet. So this last bit that I'll finish with, I'll have to hurry. I mentioned it at the start of the show. The music festival at Glastonbury. The Telegraph says, during their appearance at Glastonbury, Bob Villain chanted free, free and the crowd responded Palestine before leading the crowd in a separate chant of death, death to the IDF. Yeah, that's right, death to the IDF. Here it is on video, clip four.
Free, 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 free. All right, but have you heard this one though? Death, death to the IDF. 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 From the river to the sea, Palestine must be, will be, inshallah, it will be free.
From the river to the sea. In other words, no Jews anywhere. Death, death to the IDF. And guess who's there to broadcast it for the whole world? That would be the BBC. That would be what the British people pay for. That's the television they pay for over here. How many, I think it was estimated in 2022 or 23 that something like 23 million people watched the Glastonbury Music Festival. As I say, what a contrast to what God's family is producing and even performing right here in the UK. Not in front of nearly as many people. God has warned Britain for decades. Going back to the ministry of Herbert Armstrong, he sent out a warning message. Look at what you're giving up. I mean, you look at that footage and you think, is this actually Britain? How could there be so much anti-Semitism in Britain? Britain was perhaps mostly responsible for the establishment of the Israeli state. That's not that long ago, in the 1940s. What happened? Melanie Phillips says, what happened at Glastonbury was that thousands of young people, the coolest, hippest young people who are into peace and love and the brotherhood of man, were chanting for the murder of Jews beneath a forest of flags that transmit a similar message to the Nazi swastika. For it is only Jews, it says, that the Jewish state, who are singled out for such murderous frenzy. The Glastonbury crowds aren't chanting death to the Chinese Communist Party or death to Russian forces in protest at the persecution of the Uyghurs or the onslaught in Ukraine. They chant for the murder only of those who have been defending their people against genocidal annihilation for the past 20 years. And of course, they're learning how to do this or why they should do this at a university near you. Whether it's in the UK or the United States, that's why we've had all the pro-Hamas demonstrations over the last 18, 19 months. It really shows how sick we are as a society. There's another story about an October 7 hostage that was set free. He was speaking, I assume it was a man, he was speaking at an event in Ontario, that's in Canada, where people from the university nearby surrounded the entrance and the exit to where he was speaking and chanted, "Hamas is coming." Can you imagine? Hamas is coming? That's Canada today. We saw the demonstrations in the US. You see it here. They're chanting at a popular music festival, even as Celtic Throne is performing up north here in the UK. What a contrast. Death, death to the IDF, and then Celtic Throne revealing the roots, really, of the throne of David, the old throne, in this case, of David, right here, right there in London. And here we're singing about that throne and how it moved to Ireland and continued on in its journey and had a royal culture to go with it. And we're singing about Jerusalem, New Jerusalem even. A beautiful, beautiful message, quite unlike the one that played out in Glastonbury over the weekend. Well, there's more I could get to. I am out of time. The fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening
to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.